Everybody, welcome back to the Tipsy Ghosts. We're your tipsy hosts, Sarah and Lindsay.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I was looking at points and like, don't say it. Don't say hi.
Don't you do it. Don't you interrupt.
And I want to say that that's probably the first time, guys, that we have done our 3-second countdown without me like laughing hysterically in between.
It's probably because we didn't have 55 drinks before we started.
That's true. I'm just now starting on the drinks.
Maybe we learned. Maybe we did. Maybe we didn't. I don't know.
Oh, I'm going to apologize in advance for, well, it's not in advance. Apologize for last week from me.
I quite enjoyed last week's episode myself.
You know what?
It was not good.
We've all had our moments. It's fine.
It was not strong, Lindsay. It was my first weekend that I had had off in 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and I just went a little too hard on the White Claws.
Four deep, guys.
We heard. Four deep.
And you were giving me tequila shots.
No, that was my fiance.
Okay.
It was one shot.
And then we had the mixed drink of the Tipsy Ghost, too.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you're making this not...
I'm a lightweight. Not about your fault. I understand. No, it was me. And I'm a lightweight. I totally own up to that. But you guys, after I was, like, done, you guys did some ghost hunting in the spare bedroom, right?
Yeah, we sat there and tried to talk to the old man ghost in your...
Yes, and I had my magical dowsing rods, and they were amazing.
The sticks.
Copper sticks.
Don't do it.
Sorry.
And we tested out the new EMF meter. Is it EMF meter? Yeah. Yeah. Didn't know if I was being redundant by... I read it after top. I didn't know if the word meter was redundant, but it's not. So here we go.
It's not an EMFM.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You know what I was doing.
Yeah, I gotcha. So you talked to the ghost. Yes. And did you get anything?
Maybe for like a half a second we did.
I thought it was more successful than that.
Okay. You tell me about your perception of that.
Well, I'm concerned about your perception.
Well, sometimes I tend to like...
My perception was I was asleep in the chair.
That's true, she was.
Yeah, Lindsay's out of the picture at this point.
We all know that I tend to get a little overly excited about these things. You know, let's flash back to my Zach Bacon's descriptions of every photo from Sally House. So that's why I'm like, yeah, it was totally cool. It was fine. You tell me what you saw and I'll validate.
So we got the dowsing rods out of their package. They were fresh. And I went and I sat in front of the closet because that's apparently where...
That's where we heard it last time.
Yeah, that's where we heard stuff.
Right? We were just asking yes or no questions. And we got several responses. Yes responses. And just, I think, two no responses.
On the rods.
With the dowsing rods. Yeah. And it kind of validated... for me that there was somebody.
Yeah, there. I mean, we were asking just pretty basic questions, I feel like.
Right, just taking it easy, starting it out.
Yeah. Definitely, I remember that. But I do remember just like one or two small spikes on the EMF meter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go into the red zone. No. But it did get higher than your baseline green. I've tried to do some research in the meantime to find out what his name was.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, and I was just going to ask if he figured it out.
So the internet has not told me, and a really, really simple thing that I could do is march right on over to two of my neighbors and just ask. But that's really intimidating, so I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
I've asked my fiance.
Guess what
to
we're
going to
go do once our food
Please
gets
hold.
Here.
Yeah, we're going to be finding it out. Did you find anything?
I found a few things, but nothing really pertinent to the dowsing rods or this topic. So I've asked Mike to please go over and ask our neighbors who has died in our house, and he has kindly agreed.
Oh, yay.
Perfect. It wasn't the person right before you who owned this house?
No.
Oh, it was a couple people ago.
Tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
I see.
Yep. And apparently you can't just Google who died here.
No, but you can go to like property taxes. I think all that stuff is public record. You can put in this.
It gets kind of difficult. And then so I kind of
got... expert sleuth, I must say.
So I kind of classify myself as pretty intense on investigations. Like if you ask me about somebody, I can find a lot of information that I most people shouldn't be able to find. But I don't have this person's name, and I think that's what I'm finding is difficult. Mm. And I've, in the process of trying to find this person's name, I went down a rabbit hole and ended up on Ancestry and found some yearbook photos of my dad in high school and found he had some outrageous sideburns.
Oh my.
And awesome. Yes, I also found my grandma and grandpa's marriage certificate from the 1940s. Aww. And I found that you had to declare and be tested on whether or not you had syphilis whenever you signed your marriage certificate.
Oh.
Interesting. Oh,
in what year?
The 1940s.
My God.
Why do we get rid of that custom? I mean, come
so
on.
So I asked my mom about it, and she's standard. Like, well, right? I asked my mom, and she's like, well, actually, that was, that they did away with that in the 1980s, so it's actually pretty recent. And I was like, wow. Oh, my gosh.
Dang, I had no idea.
So, fun fact.
That is a fun fact.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that did take a hard right turn from figuring out who.
I started this research at like 10 p.m. and I found myself awake on Ancestry looking at my grandma and grandpa not having syphilis in the 40s at probably 5 a.m. the next day.
And you're like, where have I gone wrong with my life?
Yes, that's exactly right.
I hope you've
been there.
I hope you're prepared to declare that you don't have syphilis on your upcoming marriage certificate.
Yes. Well, now that the courts are open, we can get married.
You can get married.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, hallelujah.
But not till after the bachelorette party.
That is correct.
Okay.
Ooh, I'm pretty excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fun. It'll be fun, guys.
I feel like you're not very hyped. Get up to my level. That's what she kept saying. God.
I am so hyped.
I just know it's going to be a big sleepover.
Lindsay's probably a little gun shy from a week ago.
I know. I can tell. You are very reserved.
I'm not 22, 23 anymore. And so it took me I wasn't hungover the next day, but it took me a day to recover. Like, I went to work that night and I was like, I just don't feel good. Like, my head was hurting. My stomach was hurting. And I was just like, I just don't feel good.
Do you want to tell them about the drive home?
Says the youngest person here.
I know. Okay. I am the youngest. Only by a few months. Keep it up. The drive home.
Not for me.
So Boyson drove me home, and her fiance was lovely enough to drive my car, so I didn't have to come get it the next day. And she had texted my husband from my phone as we were, leaving, saying we're on our way or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's, a 40-minute drive. And I did really good the whole drive. We talked to Sarah in the car.
Yep.
And I remember you came on in the car to talk to us as we were driving. And I was like, I don't remember you leaving.
Yes. Did you just slip out of there?
Because Boyce was like, let's go. Let's get in the car. And I was like, where's Sarah?
I was already long gone.
And so,
typical. That's what I do. I just bounce out.
I know.
See ya.
I made it the whole 40 minutes home, and I was doing fine. I was talking with Boydston, and she pulls into, I live in a cul-de-sac, and she pulls into my cul-de-sac, and she goes, which house? And I said, it's that one. And I pointed, and she starts to pull into the driveway, and I just bolted out the door because I felt it coming. And you guys know what I mean when I say it.
Yes.
And it was, I think it was because we got off the highway and we were hitting all the stoplights and it was stop and go and turning. And I just was like, this isn't working. And so
it triggered you.
I bolted out into the street.
As I'm still driving.
She's still driving. She hasn't stopped. She's yelling at me. I mean, it's the middle of the night. She's yelling at me, Lindsay, get back in the car. And then I just puked everywhere in my cul-de-sac. Didn't even make it to the grass.
Shoot.
And I get, kind of said my goodbyes or whatever to her, go inside. There's puke on my shoes. So I take them off in the garage. I run upstairs to my bedroom. My husband's in bed. He was asleep. I woke him up and he goes, what happened? And I was like, why weren't you waiting for me? Like, I kind of need your help here. And so I went in the bathroom, I showered and everything got cleaned up. The next morning, my husband looks out our window and you can see my puke in our cul-de-sac. Oh, and he goes, was that you? And I was like, yep. Sorry, it was.
Hey, it happens.
I know. And he's like, you couldn't have gone in the grass. And I was like, wasn't thinking about that at the moment. No, I was just
trying to not go in the car.
Just trying not to go in the car.
I think you did a great job.
Thanks.
So, I appreciate you not throwing up in my car.
Yes. I felt it coming as we entered my neighborhood. And I was like, I can make it. I can make it. And then that last turn into my cul-de-sac, I was like, I'm not making it.
It's never a good sign.
This isn't going to end well. I can't
do this.
So we had to wait like 4 days before it rained to wash away the puke in our cul-de-sac. I'm so embarrassed. My poor neighbors. I'm so sorry.
Do you have a hose?
I
was going to
say. I do.
There's a sink on the hose. You can just
I do, but I was lazy because I knew the rain was coming.
There it was.
I was lazy. Right. You can handle it.
I was lazy. I'm sorry.
Back here, dogs. I need you guys to go lay down so we don't hear your claws.
Click, click, click.
Go lay down, please. Go lay down.
He's like, but I don't want to.
Go lay down.
Hello.
There you go.
Good boy.
Just need Lucy. I don't know where she is.
We'll just have to take a pause whenever she clicks her way in.
We'll take a pause for her paws.
Oh, so funny.
Oh, I'm so funny.
Okay. I loved that.
Thank you. I knew she you would. Like puns. I do.
You both do.
Just so witty with the comebacks. So guys, we are doing our paranormal episode this week, right?
That's right.
True.
Okay. And who's going first?
It's me.
Yeah, it's Boydston.
It's another shock. Surprise me.
What? And saving the best for last with me. Sorry, Sarah.
Okay.
Okay. That sounds about right. I mean, truth be told, my stories are fairly just mediocre. It's all right.
Oh, stop okay. it. They are
she was
great.
Saying sorry to me because I was going first. But
no, I was saying sorry to her because she was in the middle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah, sorry, Sarah.
Yeah. Okay, all right. It's fine. I'm a filler. I get it.
Just this episode.
And next one.
This is why we changed the order. I was going to say routine, and that was the wrong word. Order.
I think it's...
No, don't think about it. Just do it.
Okay.
You'll become me if you overthink.
Lead us in.
So, what do I love the most when we go ghost hunting?
Dowsing rods.
Copper sticks.
Okay, keep going.
Peeing your pants.
Diapers. I'm
sorry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is the last time I feed them my alcohol.
I mean, you asked for it, really. You did. There's Lucy. Let's pause.
Pause for Lucy's pause.
Pause for pause.
And I need to give my
Okay, I will give you a hint since this seems to be difficult. If there is something that you should not...
Oh, you like to sit in chairs.
Yeah.
Sit in chairs.
Okay.
I mean, you also shouldn't pee your pants, but...
Listen, it happened one time and I was possessed.
Hashtag possession. Possession.
Anyway, so we're going to talk about the Chair of Death.
Ooh.
In Thirsk.
In where?
Thirsk. Where's Thirsk with a K instead of a T.
Where's Thirsk?
Okay. It's in England, if you would let me finish.
Okay, sorry. My bad.
It's in Thirsk, England. According to local legend, this seemingly innocuous piece of furniture has been responsible for more deaths than most serial killers.
What?
That Prove was
it. Jinx.
What? One estimate puts the number of its victims over 60.
Oh my.
So we're going to travel back in time to early 1700s in North Yorkshire.
Got it.
Which is in England.
I know that one.
Daniel Audi was a nice gentleman who enjoyed his hobby of counterfeiting and recently moved to a small village outside of Thirsk to pursue his business of forging currency.
Oh, like my favorite hobby.
Yeah, like any of us would want to do.
Sure.
Wholesome.
Daniel had purchased a farm after moving to the area, and the farm's location was ideal for his illegal coining activities, as it was on a hill so he could see anyone coming, and it was pretty secluded. Some reports say that he built a house with a hidden chamber connected to the cellar via a secret passageway.
This seems like it's going in a good place.
Mm-hmm. Also, side note, I want to find or visit a secret passageway.
Well, okay. Go back to,
okay.
I've got it in my head. Still. Go back to still. There's a passageway there.
I don't think I'm allowed.
Well, we're going to break in.
No, I don't think that's allowed.
No, we're not.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody.
breaking into stall.
Again, they my can brother hear told me you that even if
there's a back whisper. Passageway.
You can enter through the back.
I've said yeah, it you three can times. Go through the back way. I said it three times already.
Parking in the rear, that's my favorite sign.
You would.
We'll find it, is what I'm saying.
All right, passageway. Okay. We'll find you a passageway.
Secret passageway in his house that he built. Daniel had a daughter named Elizabeth, and Elizabeth found love and married Thomas Busby.
Oh, Busby.
Busby.
Cute.
A locally known thug.
Oh, okay. Maybe not so Busby sounded so cute.
Dang, you could have told me that before I called him cute.
He was a thief and a drunkard and an all-around great guy.
Honestly, he sounds like
the worst. Your tone is telling me something different than the words.
Because we're excited for this story. Busby owned an inn 3 miles from Daniel, and they soon became partners in crime in the lucrative counterfeit business.
Huh. Family biz.
Family
biz for the Busbys.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Play on words.
Their relationship was known to be pretty toxic. They seemed to be arguing constantly, and Busby was often upset with Daniel for any number of reasons. You name it, he was mad at him. And then things went south, as they tend to do. Busby was known for his violent temper, and he and Daniel got into a heated argument, probably over coins.
Over money.
Secret passageways.
Or secret passageways. Maybe even his daughter, Elizabeth.
Their son-in-law and father-in-law, right?
Yes.
Okay. Making sure I'm keeping the family tree right.
Daniel has a daughter named Elizabeth. Elizabeth married Busby.
Okay, got it.
The drunk.
Christmases must be very uncomfortable.
Maybe.
Well, they were obviously arguing constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it said that Daniel threatened to take his daughter Elizabeth away this night. And Busby was exceptionally drunk and exceptionally volatile. He returned to his inn. And there he found Daniel sitting in his favorite chair.
Done.
This infuriated Busby, and he forcibly removed Daniel from his chair and threw him out. And then he slept it off, and everybody lived happily ever after.
No, they didn't.
No, this is wrong.
You're right, it's wrong.
It's a lie.
Did he kill him?
Ooh, so after throwing Daniel out, he was seething. And that night, Busby grabbed a hammer, went to Daniel's house, and bludgeoned him to death.
There it is.
He tried to hide the body in the woods, but a quick search by concerned family and friends uncovered the truth. Daniel's badly beaten body was found, and it was pretty clear who the culprit was. Busby was immediately arrested and charged with murder. After his trial, he was sentenced to death for the murder of Daniel. His punishment. So, early 1700s, what do you think the punishment was?
Hanging.
That's okay. What I was going to say, was hanging, or like, what's putting them in like the gallows or whatever, you know what I'm talking about? No.
I think that's hanging.
Not the gallows. The thing with the hands and the face.
Oh, like getting your head chopped off?
No, my gosh. I'm not talking about the guillotine. Oh. Not where they kill you, but where you just...
I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name of it.
Where you're like in the courtyard and everybody can look at you and you're in the stocks, is it?
Maybe. You're getting warmer.
Oh, my gosh. Hold on.
I mean, you're not getting warmer, but I know what you're talking
about.
We're Googling.
Hold on. Google. Oh, dang it. I mistyped Google.
Shit. We're off to a bad
Did you type goggle?
I do that sometimes. I did. Ogle. It missed my G.
Altogether, huh?
Gosh, stockyard punishment. I don't know really what to Google here.
1700s punishment in England?
I don't want to ruin the story.
Yeah, she's going to tell us, so just let her.
I mean, okay. People, let us know what I'm talking about. Everyone knows what I'm talking about.
Except for Lindsay. So his punishment was to be gibbeted.
Oh, what the fuck
That's
is
not
that?
What I'm thinking of. What is that?
It's not. Gibbet? So gibbet.
With a B.
G-I-B. Like, is that where your intestines get ripped out?
Okay, so it's when you are hanged, dipped in tar, placed in a body-shaped cage, and displayed on a post in full view.
So you're dead, obviously, when all that happens.
Yeah, you were hanged.
So they're just, like, mocking just your body, basically?
Messing with you after the fact.
Right. Okay. And in Busby's case, he was placed in full view of his inn. or that was the plan.
That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. So on the way to the gallows, Busby asked to stop by the pub, and he sat in his favorite chair and had a final drink. He stood up and he said, "May sudden death come to anyone who dare sit in my chair."
Okay. This is why the chair's famous. Yep. Yep. I get
Here
it.
We go.
It's coming together.
It remained in the pub for centuries, the chair did, and people were dared to sit in it. All right. The first reported death alleged to be associated with the death chair is that of a chimney sweep who, along with a friend, sat in the chair whilst having a drink one evening in 1984. No, 1894.
It was like, that was a long history of that chair just not being sat in.
Fairly recent.
The sweep never made it home that night. Being completely inebriated, he laid down on the road to sleep. The next morning, his body was found hanging from the post next to the gibbet.
Oh.
His death was ruled a suicide, but in 1914, the friend with whom the chimney sweep had spent his last hours with admitted on his deathbed to having robbed and murdered his friend.
Oh my goodness.
During World War II, I did it. Did you hear
it? I caught it.
That was very great. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. Airmen from a nearby base made the pub a hot spot and the chair became a hot seat. And people noticed that ones who sat in it would never come back from war. In 1967, two Royal Air Force pilots sat in it, and while driving back, they crashed into a tree and died.
Why has nobody burned this chair?
A few years later, two bricklayers decided to try it, and that afternoon, the one who sat in it fell to his death. The cursed chair has apparently killed every person who has sat in it, no matter what. Some instances include a roofer who sat in it and died after the roof he was working on collapsed. A cleaning woman who stumbled into it while mopping and was later killed by a brain tumor.
Okay, she didn't mean to sit in the chair. Come on, chair.
She did.
It knows no boundaries. It cares not.
Does it say, like, how long it took for them to die from when they sat in the chair?
It's pretty quick.
Oh. Okay. I was going to say, like, she sat in the chair and then 20 years later she had a brain tumor. I'm like, no.
No, and kind of historically brain tumors are not long.
20 years, yeah.
Long I meant like to suffer from.
No, I know. I meant like 20 years later she was found with a brain tumor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A number of cyclists and motorists who suffered fatal road accidents have also been noted to have sat in the chair prior to their accidents. A hitchhiker who was run over after having spent two nights at the pub and sat in the chair.
Okay, I'm with you. I gotcha.
A local man died of a heart attack shortly after sitting in the condemned chair. And these are just some examples. So eventually the pub owner moved it into the basement, hoping that nobody would sit in it ever again. However, one day a delivery man was in the basement and he sat in it. And an hour later, he crashed his truck and died.
Aww. Okay, so that kind of answers that, an hour later.
I mean, that's not consistent, but it's...
But no, I get what you're saying.
It's soon. So it's said that for some time prior to death, and the time varies in all cases, the person who sat in the chair experiences haunting experiences, including extreme itching, paranoia, hearing things, confusion, items being moved, and written warnings on mirrors and walls about the person's imminent death, in addition to many other strange happenings. After the death of the delivery man, the landlord asked the local museum to take it. And they did. So to ensure nobody sat in it ever again, they hung the chair 5 feet from the ground.
Why don't they burn it?
Well, I mean, they don't burn a lot of haunted items. That's like dolls true. And stuff.
Although people are now safe from sitting in the chair, new stories still come about the chair's power. So although the cursed chair is now unable to cause any more harm, many claim to have seen the ghost of Thomas Busby at the site opposite the pub at which the gallows stood. And at the pub itself, there have been reports of a tall, terrifying, faceless apparition on an upstairs landing, which disappears through a wall, leaving those who encounter it filled with a sense of dread and despair.
Okay.
So that's one chair I will not be sitting in.
I'm very glad to hear it, that you will not be sitting in that chair.
Yep.
So 60 people.
That's the estimate.
That's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a few.
It's a lot of people who are like, hey, I hear if you sit in this chair, you're going to die. Nuh-uh. And then they go sit in that chair. You think by, like, number 30, you would be like, maybe I should have. Well, yeah. Okay. Thank you for your story. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the chair.
The good part is that we won't be able to test that chair out, even if we wanted to, you know, have a few drinks and be like, I'm totally sitting in the chair. We don't have the opportunity.
But we can still go see it, right? It's on display.
In England.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we can't just, like, you know, pop over right now. I mean, I guess we could, but I'm not.
I mean, like, we could catch, like, a red eye. Yeah.
It's kind of expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I don't think COVID would let us go to England right now either.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a lot of other places we need to go within the States first.
Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of which, I think I'm up next.
Are you in the U.S. of A?
I'm in the U.S. of A. And I'm going to take us to an area I think we've kind of visited near.
Okay.
Not quite. Near.
Okay.
I'm taking us to Charleston.
Okay.
Okay.
You're getting out of Kansas City. I love it.
I am. I'm trying. But, you know, I thought about this and I was like, I might be breaking our one rule of going to visit this place, because we talked about going out to the Poinsett Bridge.
Oh, yes, 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 we did.
Where is the Poinsett Bridge?
It's in South Carolina.
We could just make a little loop-de-loo around all these places.
Let's do it.
But I'm going to tell you about it just in case we don't, okay?
All right.
All right.
Let me hear it.
All right. So I chose the Old Charleston Jail in Charleston. And it is actually, I had to Google it because I wanted to make sure I was referencing it correctly. But turns out they do it both ways too. So you might hear me say Old Charleston Jail and Old County Jail, but they're both the same.
Gotcha.
All right. So the Old County Jail is located on 4 acres. Apparently that was set aside for public use from Charleston's earliest settlements. FYI, Charleston has a lot of ghosts.
Yes, because it's a very old town.
It is.
Well, comparatively to America.
Yes.
We're still babies.
All right, so over the years, the land was used for a hospital, a poorhouse, a workhouse for runaway slaves, and also, eventually, it was used for the jail. The jail was operational from 1802 until 1939, and it housed some of Charleston's most infamous criminals. And during the Civil War, it housed federal prisoners of war. When the jail was constructed in 1802, it consisted of 4 stories. It was topped with a 2-story, oh gosh, is it octagonal?
An octagon?
Octagonal or octagonal?
Octagonal.
I don't know. Why do we pick such big words?
My first gut reaction was to say octagonal. And then
just say in an octagon.
Why don't you say a building with 8 sides?
Well, okay. It was topped with a 2-story tower that was shaped like an octagon.
There you go. Okay.
There we go. The 1886 earthquake badly damaged the tower and top story of the main building, and these were subsequently removed. What did I do?
Nothing. I just had a chill. Like a full body.
She like looked seizure. Like she was seizing.
Okay, where was I?
Octagon.
Octagonal. Okay.
Earthquake.
The old jail housed a variety of inmates, including John and Lavinia Fisher, and other members of their gang who were convicted of highway robbery in the Charleston region. They were imprisoned here from 1819 to 1820. And a little background about Lavinia Fisher, because you know I had to look her up. She was...
Uh-oh. It's bad that she's already giggling.
I read some of my writing, and it was just beautiful. She was reported by some legends to have been the first female serial killer in the United States.
Oh, okay.
Get it, Lavinia.
We need to talk about Lavinia.
Her origins are unknown. However, she resided in the U.S. for much of her life. She was married to John Fisher, and both were convicted of the highway robbery, which I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
which was a capital offense at the time, not murder.
A capital offense?
A capital offense.
Oh, I thought you said a capital fence.
No, I just spoke in cursive. You. Okay,
I knew what you were saying.
Capital fence.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So the couple, they ran the 6 mile, which was a hotel, in the outskirts of Charleston in 1819. And as legend has it, Lavinia lured in many of her guests, fed them dinner, and poisoned them with tea that was poisoned with or laced with oleander.
Hmm.
And her husband John would rob them in their sleep, murder them, and butcher them. and then dispose of them in the cellar of their 6 mile house, which was their hotel.
Jeez.
Sure.
Efficient.
According to legend, just before they dropped the trap door once she was in the prison, for her to be hanged, she supposedly shouted, "If any of you have a message for the devil, tell me now, for I will be seeing him in a moment."
No.
Okay, Lavinia.
Probably she knew true. It was going down. At least she knew where she was going.
Yeah, she also apparently requested to be hanged in her wedding dress.
Strong work.
Yeah, thank you.
Hanged.
I tried. But yeah, she wanted to be hanged in her wedding dress.
Hey.
Okay, Lavinia was a little strange.
You want to look your best.
Yeah, so it's also said that, you know, instead of waiting for the trapdoor, she ran forward off the ledge, but the rope did not snap her neck, so she struggled for almost 15 minutes before she died.
Oh my gosh. That's a long time.
It's pretty rough. Some of the last 19th century high sea pirates were jailed here in 1822 while they awaited hanging. And the jail was active after the discovery of Denmark Vesey's planned slave revolt. I did not know.
I don't know anything about this. Okay. Yeah.
So apparently the main trials were held.
Look at you talk about Charleston.
I was just really trying to channel my southern accent.
Well, shit.
Well, shit. What y'all doing? All right.
What accent was that?
It's Australian, obviously.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. During the Civil War, Confederate and federal prisoners of war were incarcerated here, and it's one of more than 1,400 historically significant buildings within the Charleston Olden Historic District. For a long time, the jail sat vacant. Words are hard for me right now.
That's okay. In 1999,
the building was stabilized by the American College of Building Arts, or ACBA. ACBA.
ACBA. ACBA.
I'm sure they didn't call themselves that, but...
Luba!
It's a new rap artist called ACBA.
ACBA.
And they held classes within the building. At night, they would lock up the doors and set the alarms. Hold on. I'm laughing because I obviously voice texted a lot of my things, and it's not correct.
Is that why you laugh at your notes?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I have to, like, make sense of them as I'm reading them. But I said, "I'll need to come back the next morning." But I don't think that's what I was. I said, "Only to come back the next morning to find hundreds of footprints left in the sawdust overnight."
Oh. Ooh.
They were all different sizes as well. So some child size, some adult size. The ACBA moved out of the building in 2016. In 2003, the tour company called Bulldog Tours, founded by John Laverne, started daytime and nighttime ghost tours, so we can technically go there.
Yes! Daytime? I don't want to go in the daytime.
Yeah. I mean, ghosts are there during the day.
I mean, yeah, but it's the whole ambiance.
I mean, I get that, yeah. It's been featured on multiple programs, including Ghost Adventures, and you best believe I've seen that one.
You've seen all of them, to be fair.
Haven't you guys seen that one?
I don't know if I've seen
old Charleston Jail.
They all run together.
I feel like I have, but
this
I
was an old one. This is when Nick was still on the show.
Oh, okay.
So it's been a while. So it was on Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, and Travel Channel, but all those things I think are on there.
They? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So apparently Bulldog Tours has contributed over $1 million to the restoration of the historical building. Many visitors have claimed to have experienced supernatural encounters. All right, so just like many of the other haunted buildings, the old city jail has quite the haunted history. There are thousands of people that have died here. Some people estimate over 14,000 people have died there.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of people.
That is a ton of people.
Especially if you see this place, it looks just like a mansion. Like, it doesn't really look like a huge prison.
Like, they just died waiting or serving out their sentences, I guess.
And I think what they're referring to is actually, like, over the time period on the land between, like, the hospital
and that makes more sense. Yeah.
But there were definitely a lot of prisoners that died there. Some of the shows that I watched said that there were reports from when there were prisoners there that the guards would walk at night and you would just hear crunching sounds. Mm-hmm. And the crunching sounds were lice eggs underneath their boots.
Ew. No, thank you.
Yeah, kind of gross.
Well, it makes me uncomfortable.
In order, and they lived
That's
in
a lot
such...
of eggs to make that noise.
Yeah, they assumed that the size of the cells were approximately 3x3.
Oh, wow.
They were teeny.
Not enough to even lay down for, like, a bed.
Right. Yeah. And obviously they were so close that things like lice could spread super easily. So they basically just spent a lot of time shaving all the prisoners down head to toe.
Oh, gosh.
Kind of gross.
Yeah, very.
Okay, so when the jail finally became the place for convicts, like we spoke about earlier, it was built to only house about 130 prisoners. But at its busiest time, the jail was holding approximately 350 people. And again, this was a pretty small building. Looks like just a house. So it's a lot of people crammed in there.
Yeah, clammed.
They were clammed in there. And their lice.
Them and their clams.
Clams and lice.
Their clams were overtaken with lice.
Clams.
Okay. All right, I'm going to stop. All right. Okay, so the first ghost that visitors say that they have seen lingering in the jail is Lavinia.
Oh, Lavinia was coming back.
Shocker. Paranormal experts will always bring up her final words like we spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
She was talking to the devil. There have been multiple sightings of her walking around the jail, and paranormal teams even got a recording of her speaking. When they asked her a question, she answered, "The devil."
Is she wearing her wedding dress?
I didn't get that part, but that's a great question.
I hope so. That would be so creepy.
There's been videos and pictures of her taken as well. One woman claims to have seen a man walking from one hall to the other, and when she asked about him, the tour guide told her that it was Mr. Fisher, which would have been John, Lavinia's husband.
Right. Makes sense. If she's there, he's there.
Yeah. They didn't really speak a lot about like how he died. Obviously, hers was fairly dramatic, though. As the tour began, walking further into the jail, the woman felt something tug on her hair. She jumped and asked if anyone had seen anything. No one had, so she kept going about her business. Minutes later, the woman said she felt someone's hand on her neck.
Oh.
She wasn't able to breathe, and the tour guide thought she was having a cardiac arrest.
Oh, wow.
Which is fairly severe. Yeah.
Side note, I kind of want a ghost to tug on my hair.
Oh.
I didn't know. Okay. No, now, next time we go, don't you guys go and start tugging my hair and be like, it's a ghost.
No, it just sounded kind of dirty.
I didn't mean it like that.
I want a ghost to tug on my hair.
I'm just saying, I feel like that would be, I don't
know. Ghost sex is what you're looking for.
I don't want a ghost. Dang it. I don't want a ghost to wrap their hands around my throat or to claw me or scratch me, but a little friendly tug on the hair, yeah.
Okay, all right, sure.
Okay, I'm not a, this all counts. You guys are the dirty ones.
Yeah, I'm not the one who said I kind of want a ghost to pull my hair.
I said, okay. I feel like I'm digging the hole. Yeah.
You know I'm going to keep going if you keep bringing it
up. Okay, good
for you. Okay, all right, sorry. When the tour guide asked if she was all right, she told them someone was choking her. Okay.
Don't look at me. I don't want that.
You like that?
No. Stop hitting your microphone.
I did that one time. One time, I'm sorry.
I do not want to be choked.
She wants choked and hair pulled, apparently. okay. All right. That went down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, thanks to you guys.
She immediately left the jail and ended the tour herself. Which I would too. I mean, dramatic. There are many tour guides that have reported being manhandled in the jail by ghosts and seeing orbs. This building does hold a lot of spirits, and that's why it's in the haunted place in Charleston, South Carolina. What is there? Oh, I see. I missed the top. It's like the top haunted places.
I was like, okay.
Good job, sorry Sarah. About
that. You know what? It's really hard to read when it's in black there. It's not my fault. You can't see it on this.
Can't see. They don't know what you're talking about.
It's very hard to read. But it's in the top haunted places in Charleston, South Carolina. We can add it to our list.
Can't wait. I'll go there. Will you go there with us?
I bet you would go there.
Hey, ghost.
You can wear your wedding dress.
I'm wearing my wedding dress and show up. You're like, want to pull my hair?
I'm into you choking me and tugging my hair. Preferably at the same time.
I'm gonna wear. I have really long hair, guys, and I'm gonna wear my hair all down and just be tossing it.
Oh my gosh! As maybe we if walk. You just announce it early on in the tour, like loudly, multiple times, actually.
Pull my hair. Do it.
Choke me. I like
it. Oh God, we're gonna get kicked out.
Like, who are these sick people?
What are they into in Kansas and Missouri?
Hashtag dirty ghost talk.
Oh my.
Oh, let's please not hashtag that when we're putting this episode up. I don't want to see what other hashtags are under there.
I haven't actually officially hashtagged any of the things we've talked about. No,
we shouldn't. We shouldn't.
Don't worry.
Hashtag purse wine.
Hashtag spirit thrusting.
Oh gosh. Don't want to see the things that come up for that.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Good call. Okay. Well, there we go.
There that's you go. The- that was good. I didn't know if we were over or if we just got off on a tangent.
Nope, that's it. That's all I got for you on the old Charleston jail. It's Charleston, SC.
All right. Drink
South break. Croatia.
South Croatia.
Knew it was coming.
Gosh, the amount of times I'm telling you guys to suck an egg tonight is going to be a lot.
You knew it was going to happen.
I'm
sorry.
Oh, no.
I had to take a drink. I'm sorry.
You guys, I just Googled... ghost penis.
Why?
Why? Who is the dirty birdie now?
Your phone's like,
Oh my gosh, what
are you okay?
I don't even know if I want to know what you're pulling up. Is it pictures?
Let me see.
Well, yeah, I went to images.
Oh gosh, of course you did.
No.
Okay. Oh, don't God. Send it to me. I don't want this on my phone, but let me see.
What? New tattoo idea for you.
First oh, is it tattoo?
Okay.
Show me.
Oh, now she wants to
between
see.
That, the tattoo the and the Feliz Halloween.
Feliz Halloween.
I lost.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. Nope. That third picture. Mm-mm.
Is that the Feliz Halloween?
Yeah.
Yep. I couldn't see the words, but yeah, I'm assuming.
That's actually pretty clever.
That's something. All right, guys. Ready. So, my story, you guys are getting a treat, is a two for one because we're going to do a to be continued for my story because it's so much information.
Okay.
So, I'm going to start it off and then finish it up next week for you guys.
Can't wait.
So, we're doing it on David Politis. Okay. You guys know who this is?
No clue.
No.
Okay, I'm excited. So this is a story that's a little bit paranormal, a little bit conspiracy theory, a little bit true crime. It's kind of like everything all rolled into one.
Okay.
So it's one that I wanted to do for a while.
Okay.
But I knew it was going to be a massive project, and I'm not going to be able to talk about all of it.
Is he polite?
To us?
Sorry. Oh, my goodness.
That's how we're going to remember.
So he is a former police detective who is now an investigator and a self-published writer. And he is behind the movement of Missing 411. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
So this is about, did you know, this isn't a fun fact, but the national parks have no database of missing people.
Yes. And didn't we talk about this at work?
I don't know.
How... maybe it wasn't you, but I was talking to somebody.
What else are you talking about? You're normal stuff with. You jerk. Somebody... cheating little jerk.
No. She's it was full of you. Harsh words. It totally was you because you were trying to go to Glacier National Park. Yes. And I was like, don't go to national parks because people go missing in national parks.
Oh. So this is what we're talking about is missing people at national parks.
Yes. Okay. I didn't know that.
It is like there's a whole like Reddit forum about missing 411 and about search and rescue officers telling their paranormal weird stories that are unexplained. Guys, it's fascinating.
Okay.
Kept me up all night.
I am so excited.
Here we go.
So he has written about 7 books and he has investigated tens of thousands of cases, but he's written about 1,400 cases are the ones that he's really kind of delved into. Obviously, here's my disclaimer, guys. I have not read all 7 books.
Oh, okay.
I have not read any of his books, actually. So goals. This is going to be a very brief overview.
Yeah.
So in his books, The Missing 411 Project documents the disappearance of people in national parks. So it all got started because he was approached by 2 off-duty park rangers who stated that there was a multitude of uncanny disappearances in their parks and were concerned that the park was not handling these cases appropriately. So he started getting into it and started researching. That's when he found out. He called, you know, national parks, who have all these people on payroll and all these search and rescue officers who are highly trained, and found out that there's no database for missing people to be tracked across the system. So because of this, nobody knows how many people are currently missing from the parks. So then he said, well, what would it take to get a record of it, like for you guys to create a record? And they basically said it would cost $1.4 million for them to create such a list. So that's kind of what started all of this. So through his research, he has found clusters, which are like hotspots where individuals disappear at a higher rate. These are concentrated areas, and I found a map of it that's really cool. We'll have to post that when we post this episode for you guys to look at. But the concentrated areas are mainly present in California, Colorado, Washington, Georgia, Michigan, and Arkansas. And he's identified 52 regions. Throughout the U.S., there was some in Canada, like kind of up by the border up there too as well. Kind of what gets him to start looking at a case, he won't look at a case if it's like obvious animals interference or, you know, something like that, or if it's an obvious drowning, or if the individual had some kind of mental health disturbances, he won't look at that because then people think it's suicide. Basically, he only looks at those that are unexplained and you can't, they haven't found anybody and it's like no traces. So that's kind of how he picks the cases that he looks into and writes about. So in these cases, he has identified some patterns that are peculiar. And this is kind of like a pattern that he sees. He kind of talked about it a little bit, and he said, you know, if you look at five disappearing, missing people cases, you're going to find nothing's going to line up. Everything's going to be different. He goes, but when you look at 5,000, you're going to start picking out things that are similar. So this is what he's found. Number one, search dogs behave strangely. Either they can't pick up a scent at all, or they lay down and stop searching as if the person just vanished into thin air. Cadaver dogs are also not able to find a corpse or a scent at all. Another pattern, the body is found eventually, but found in an area that has been searched. And he said not even just like searched once, like searched several times, dozens of times, hundreds of times. Because typically with the parks, they will search for 7 to 10 days. And that's when the search kind of goes off because the chances of finding someone still alive after 10 days is severely decreased. So he said it's also not uncommon for the deceased to surface on a main trail or a place that has already been searched. They find that people or victims will travel uphill instead of downhill. The missing are often found at high levels of elevation, traveling an insane amount of miles through treacherous terrain in a time period that seems impossible. And he said, typically, you know, when people are lost, they know to go down because you're going to try to get to the bottom of the hill because that's where help's going to be. And they're finding people who are going like miles up away from camp. Weather-related phenomenon. Shortly after they go missing, the forecast gets real nasty. Rain, lightning, fog, blizzards, all of this, which delays their search parties as well. And he says a lot of the times it's like a storm will come right after the person goes missing. Missing clothing. Shoes, pants, shirts, jackets, all of those are often removed, even by kids who are too young to do it themselves. So there's, and I'm going to go into a couple of the weirdest cases, and there's like some that are like heartbreaking, like two-year-olds who took off their shoes and were found with their shoes and socks off and all that, and their parents were like, they didn't know how to take their shoes off. Like, they didn't know how to dress themselves yet. So they call it paradoxical undressing, and clothing, like if they're not wearing it, they'll find it nearby neatly folded.
Yeah.
High amounts of plane crashes, so search planes and helicopters crashing at abnormally high rates during their search. They also find people there with extreme ends of the intellectual scale. So on one side, there will be really well-educated people, and on the other side, there's people with disabilities. And I don't understand this one at all, but German ancestry, those with German heritage appear to go missing at higher rates. Okay. I have no idea why. I saw that and I was trying to Google and find out and I couldn't find any more information. I said, I haven't read the book, so maybe he goes into it then. And boulder fields and granite. So a large amount vanish in boulder fields or areas with huge amounts of granite. Yosemite National Park is the largest place that has all of the clusters. So they're the park that has the most. And they talk about this kind of like the people who have different views than him. They're like, well, Yosemite is also one of the most popular national parks that probably has one of the highest traffic next to Yellowstone. But he also talks about how Yosemite happens to be the biggest source of granite out of all of these parks too.
Interesting.
A body of water is typically present. Berry picking is a reoccurring theme shared amongst several cases. The victim's not feeling well or tired. So prior to disappearing, family members and friends will say, oh yeah, they said that they weren't feeling right or they weren't feeling well, and then they just disappeared. Hmm. And being last in line. Guys, if you're hiking, don't ever be the last in line.
I thought you meant like through elementary school or something. I don't know.
Yes, yes. They asked these people and their families, were they picked last in elementary school? That's a pattern.
Yes, it's a pattern. Shit. I'm in trouble.
Many report seeing the person last in line seconds before vanishing, and rarely report hearing any sounds like a gasp or a scream or anything. They just, they'll like look and they see them, and then like 5 seconds later, they'll turn around and they're just gone completely.
Weird.
With no sound. Let's hear about some cases, guys.
Ready. Let's do it.
So I tried to find, like I said, he's talked about 1,400. So I tried to find some of the weirdest ones. Some of these have happy endings and some of them don't. And I could only read so many about 2- and 3-year-olds going missing before I was like, nope, no more of those.
Right.
So we're going to start with an 84-year-old. He was a theology professor named Dr. Maurice Dametz. And this was in 1981. So he was known for his fire and brimstone religious rhetoric and his writings about the Antichrist. His hobby was collecting rocks. So he went rock collecting with one of his friends, David McSherry, and they went hiking in Pike National Forest in Douglas County, Colorado. So Dr. Dametz, 84 years old, had several health problems. He had bad knees. He wasn't really able to make it very far on his own due to his age, which is why he always brought his friends with him. So David would drop him off at a spot, and then he'd be like, I'm going to go look over here for some rocks. And he said he checked on him every 15 minutes. And then they would go and move on to a new location together. So he estimates he was about 50 yards, 150 feet away from him when he went to check on him. And he said, hey, we're going to leave in about 10 minutes. I'm going to go finish cleaning up my site. I'll be back. And he's like, okay, cool. Went and did that, came back. He said it was maybe 10 minutes he was gone, and Dr. Dametz was just gone. And all of his tools, everything was cleaned up and moved. Like, there was no trace of him. So McSherry was like, oh, he can't have gotten far because he's old and he can't wander very far. He's got bad knees. So he started calling out. Didn't hear anything. No response. So he went back to the car because he was like, hey, maybe he went back to the car on his own. But he wasn't there. So there was a 5-day intensive search. No trace left. There was no blood found. No sign that he had been attacked by animals or a victim of foul play. Hounds found no scent around the area whatsoever. He went missing at a place called Devil's Head, which is known as a haunted place inhabited by evil spirits with other strange disappearances in the vicinity. He was never found and was officially declared dead in 1990 after being missing for 9 years. And to this day, they've never found any trace of him.
Wow.
That's sad.
Yeah, like I said, sorry, guys. Some of these are going to be real sad, especially because a lot of them are, like, kids.
Thanks for the buzz, kid.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And there's, like, also some that are, like, hunters, like, people who knew the outdoors and knew how to basically, like, survive.
Mm-hmm.
Professional hikers, things like that. I mean, it's, like, anybody. 1958, Bobby Bizup, 10 years old. So he was attending a Catholic camping retreat called Camp St. Malo at Rocky Mountain National Park. He was partially deaf, so he had a hearing aid, and he went to a place to fish. There was camp counselors around. A lot of kids were around. They were all fishing there as well. So a counselor, when it was time to come back to camp, a counselor and Bobby started walking back to camp. According to the counselor, Bobby was right on his heels, right behind him. But when he glanced over his shoulder 1 minute, he was gone. So he thought, oh, Bobby's playing a game with me. So he started calling out. He was looking for him, but he couldn't find him anywhere. There was a 9-day-long intensive search involving nearly 400 police officers, volunteers, and airmen from Denver's Lowry Air Force Base. They used tracker dogs. They couldn't find any trace of him anywhere. So some odd stuff reported was a doctor reported seeing him about 15 miles away in a hardware store at Estes Park. But that didn't go anywhere. June of 1959, nearly 1 year later, there was some torn clothing and a broken hearing aid found and a few bone fragments. They were found 2,500 feet up Mount Meeker. So he went up at 10 years old. And it was about 3 miles away from where he had gone missing. So that was unusual in and of itself that he traveled 3 miles by himself. He's got a hearing aid and he went 2,500 feet up a mountain instead of going down.
Man, they must get all disoriented.
And one of the other factors, the area that they found him in had been extensively and thoroughly searched several times. It was not an easy-to-reach area. Professional hikers had to find it, and it left people puzzled with why he would have gone up the mountain so far away. Two-year-old. Mm. So, Keith Parkins, 1952. This is in Ritter, Oregon. So he was staying at his grandfather's rural remote ranch. So this isn't technically a national park, but it was out in the middle of nowhere, Oregon. His grandfather saw him playing out in the yard. He kept looking up and checking on him. He looked up one moment and the kid was gone. So they did a massive search that was launched. And it was urgent because bad weather was expected to hit that evening. So nightfall comes. Still haven't found the two-year-old. They're confused how Keith could get so far away so quickly with no trace, because all these people are searching for him and they can cover the ground faster than he can. The search went all night, and when morning came, they found him alive. So this is one of the happy stories. But he was lying face down on a frozen pond 8 miles away.
Oh, wow.
So this was rough wilderness for him to have traveled through. His jacket was taken off despite the cold and his clothes were ripped, but there was no physical injuries on him. And it was estimated, given his age, that it would have taken him 20 hours to cover that distance. Which, as a two-year-old, and it was like freezing temperatures outside, it was pitch black dark, a two-year-old's not walking for 20 hours.
I was going to say, that just seems impossible.
Mm-hmm. And he was laying face down on a frozen pond alive. Survival experts all say that it's impossible that he would have covered that distance at night in the winter. There's just no way.
Wow.
And his jacket was off.
Oh, my.
And his parents were like, he didn't know how to take his jacket off. I'm going to do one more, and then we're going to save the rest for the other night. I'm trying to decide which one I want to do. Let's do another happy one just so we can end on a good note. Okay, so this is a really cool one. Stephen Kubacki. I'm probably not pronouncing that because he's German, so this is another one of the factors.
I love when you try to pronounce things. That's my favorite.
I just keep picking these names, and I just can't do it. February 1978. So he is a foreign exchange student studying in Michigan. He went to the Great Lakes Triangle. Have you guys heard of the Great Lakes Triangle?
No.
Okay.
Is it similar to Bermuda
Triangle? It is. So
good
it is.
Yes, I know.
It is known to be a place where hundreds of boats, ships, and planes disappear from.
What?
And it is accounted for numerous mysterious events. So it is spans from a place in Wisconsin, Manitowoc, Wisconsin, to Ludington, Michigan, and then to Benton Harbor, and it makes a triangle.
Okay, but I feel like that area has got to be much smaller than Bermuda.
Oh, it's much, much smaller, yes. But
these things go missing is what I'm trying to say.
I don't know. We need to do an episode on it.
Okay, all right.
It is. It's like surrounded. It's a very small area. So he was going out to go skiing by the Great Lakes Triangle. And he was going by himself, which is a no-no, guys. Anytime you go anywhere, bring a buddy.
Got it.
But he did tell people when he would be back. So a day passed from when he was supposed to return. Wasn't back, so his family sounded the alarms. They reported him missing, and they found his skis and poles on the beach of Lake Michigan with footprints leading up to the lake on the ice. So they got in an airplane. They flew over the footprints to follow it, but the footprints just stopped suddenly at the edge of the ice. And the ice had not been broken, and his backpack was found there, too.
Okay, can I ask a stupid question?
Go for it.
Do you mean water skiing or like
no.
snow skiing?
Snow skiing.
Okay.
Because
it's
the lake,
winter.
The lake was frozen.
I don't know.
It's February in Michigan.
I don't know what the hell they do up in Michigan, okay?
It's cold.
It's probably not cold to them.
It's February.
They're probably like, this is summer.
So 15 months go by. Nothing. May 5th, 1979. His dad gets a knock on his door. And there is Steven.
Ugh.
What?
15 months, guys.
Damn.
He did not remember much. He woke up in Pittsfield, which is 40 miles from his father's house, lying in a meadow wearing clothes that were not his. He had a small satchel beside him with maps that were not his. He woke up 700 miles away from Lake Michigan.
He was clearly abducted by aliens.
I've solved the issue. No recollection of the past 15 months.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. It's obvious. Wow. That is crazy.
So then he went on, just a little fun fact, ended up getting a master's in linguistics and a PhD in clinical psych.
Oh, he's a smarty.
So very intelligent guy. Yeah. And just does not remember 15 months of his life and know how he got there, what happened.
That's nothing. Wild.
700 miles away, woke up in a meadow. I know. That's probably like the most bizarre one to me. So please write down, we need to do the Great Lakes Triangle.
I guess so.
I am writing.
Okay. So that is a little bit about the National Parks, guys, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more next week.
I've never heard of this before. It's fascinating.
I am intrigued.
Yes. Yeah. It's very cool. I kind of like, there's just a lot of, and I'll go into theories about what people think happened and conspiracy theories and all that stuff too next week.
This is really cool because all I knew was just the basic warning that I gave you when you were planning your vacation is to not go to national parks.
I didn't know anything of it.
Yeah.
I don't know anything.
I was worried I didn't want you to be abducted.
Don't worry, guys. I'm not going to a national park. The vacation did not work out.
I talked her out of it.
It's obviously, that was not it at all.
It was it. I talked her out of it.
Alien abductions is what's happening here. It's obvious.
No, it will be any abductions.
We will see.
They teleported him 700 miles away, obviously.
I can't wait to hear what the conspiracies are.
To like be it. Continued.
Dun, dun, strong dun. Work.
Thank you.
I like it. Cool.
All right. So you guys can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Tipsy Ghost and send us your stories and experiences to thetipsyghost@gmail.com.
Please do.
Tell them where they can find us, Lindsay.
She just said that.
Son of a bitch. I
know.
It
was a joke.
She doesn't listen to me when I talk.
It was a joke.
Okay.
On that note,
we will see you guys next week.
Yay. See you later.
Okay,
yay.
Bye.
Bye.